Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
That music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the worst 90 minutes in sports. That's right. It is the Two Guys Soccer Show. And tonight, FIFA gives out golden balls. Messi gets stuff thrown at him. Zlatan proves you can go back again. And Europe does things that only Europe can do and decides who's playing who in a tournament before they actually know who's playing in it. But first, I'd like to introduce my partner in crime, Mr. Stead. How you doing this evening?
Doing all right, man. A little tired, but hanging in there. Doing all right. Had a good Thanksgiving.
As did I. And we are brought to you, as always, by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. So, Mr. Stead.
Yes, sir.
Lionel Messi's had an interesting couple of days. He picked up a goal on the weekend against Atletico Madrid and promptly had an umbrella thrown at him. But this goal made him the only player to have scored a goal in every active stadium in La Liga. So I want to ask you a question. Which do you think is the greater accomplishment? Mr. Messi scoring a goal in all the stadiums in Spain or LeBron James recording a triple-double against every NBA team?
You know what? I think from a year-to-year basis, I think you got to give this one to Messi. The thing about these European football leagues and most sports leagues around the world is that I think due to relegation, year to year, there may be a new team that you haven't played against yet. So, you know, this current record that Messi has could disappear in 2 years if they have promotions of two teams that are relatively successful. Or let's say there was a squad like, let's take Malaga, who was toiling around in La Liga for a while but then disappeared and hasn't been playing up very much since. And scoring goals can be hard to come by. I mean, you could easily see Barcelona winning, being up 2-0 in a game against one of these weaker squads and have Messi be subbed out or have Messi be really inactive for the game and then have them not play them again. Whereas in the NBA and, you know, with American professional sports, you know you're going to every other team stadium at least once every single year. So if you're a Western Conference and you're playing against an Eastern Conference team and you know you're going to go there at least once and you stay in the Western Conference and you have a 13-year career, you got 13 chances. And with LeBron now playing in both conferences, he's now playing more games and stadiums on the Western Conference now that he's playing with the Lakers than he was when he was playing with Cleveland or with Miami. So I think you got to give this one to Messi, even though, of course, year to year he's playing against fewer teams, only 19 teams he's playing against. Due to the promotion and relegation system, I feel like you got to give that nod to Messi.
LeBron James's stat is more of a fluke insofar as this. Guys who you in the NBA who you associate with triple-doubles, Magic Johnson, Oscar Robertson, Russell Westbrook, played with one team.
Mm-hmm.
So Magic Johnson was never going to be able to score a triple-double against every other team because he played his entire career with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo, he could not score a triple-double against the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar Robertson played in a much smaller NBA, but he played his entire career with the Kansas City Royals.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo, he wasn't going to be able to score one. Russell Westbrook, to this point, had played his entire career with Oklahoma City before making the move to Houston. So it's more than possible that Russ will, in rather short order, do exactly what LeBron did.
Mm-hmm.
Messi's statistic is more one of consistent goal scoring to be able to do that. The only reason why he had not scored in the Wanda Metropolitano is because he just hadn't scored there yet.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew that it was going to be just a matter of time before he scored there after their move. I think the shock would be that it took him 3 years to get said goal.
Mm-hmm.
But full credit to him. And he picks up tonight, he picks up his sixth Ballon d'Or, beating out Virgil van Dijk and Cristiano Ronaldo and breaking the tie with Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, I don't know how much stock you put in the Ballon d'Or. It seems like it's always Messi or Ronaldo, or Messi, you know, except for last year when it was Luka Modric. You have a season where a player like Robert Lewandowski scores 62 goals in the calendar year, but only finishes eighth. But full credit to Messi, but I want to give credit to Mr. Petty himself, Cristiano Ronaldo, who was reportedly told that he wasn't going to finish in the top three. So in true Petty fashion, the Prince of Petty himself said, guess what? I'm not going. And he went to the Best in Italian Football Awards tonight instead. Now, I got to ask the question as to why they decided that this would be the time to do both sets of year-end awards. I realized that it's an open sort of week in the European calendar, but one would think that if the Ballon d'Or was going to be tonight, you know, the Italian Football Federation could have possibly scheduled their awards banquet for another day. But that's what they did. And Ronaldo said, I'm not going to show up. And Virgil van Dijk clocked him with the quote of the day when asked about beating his rival or his rival Cristiano Ronaldo, who he beat, who wasn't here. He responded, well, if he isn't here, is he really a rival?
That was a great bit of trolling. I will give him that. Great bit of trolling. Well,
I love the Petty. I love the Petty. We need more Petty.
I will say this, though, for, you know, why the Italians would have their league awards tonight. If you looked at the list for the rankings for the Ballon d'Or, there's not an Italian player to be found. And so to add to the Petty, it sounds like you could see that, you know, this list has been out for a while. And it could have easily been that the Italian media and the Italian Football Association, which is, of course, is privy to this list, could see that, wow, there is not a single Italian player outside of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, but he's Portuguese, he's not Italian, who is in the top 20, I believe. Oh, I'm sorry. We have Matthew Delight. And then you have Koulibaly, who's also, I think he's in the top 25. So there wasn't much love for Italian players at all. And then you're looking at there's a few Italian bass players, but you got to figure Delight earned most of his accolades for this award from his play through Ajax. So it's a little bit petty, again, on their part, as you can see that there may have been a little bit of collusion there between the Italian Football Authority, the Football Association, and Cristiano Ronaldo to, I don't know, you know, kind of thumb their nose a little bit at the Ballon d'Or World Ceremony.
So Leo Messi takes home both the, I think, the World Player of the Year and the Ballon d'Or. Kind of weird. One, I think, is from last season and is presented earlier, and the other one is kind of a calendar year type thing.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be basically two very distinct trophies, but they've kind of become the same thing. To me, it's become a little bit like a cross between the NBA MVP and the Heisman Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as either Messi or Ronaldo are always going to win it, kind of like a quarterback always wins the Heisman. Mm-hmm. And as long as Messi is playing and not injured, kind of like the NBA MVP with LeBron James, he's going to win it.
Right.
I don't know. I can look to about 2 years ago when I thought the year where Mo Salah led Liverpool to their first Champions League final, the one that they lost to Real Madrid.
Yep, he had you know, set the Premier League goal record. I believe he had over 40 goals in the for just for his club alone with cups.
But and yeah, I thought at the
kind
time,
of out,
he didn't have a great
World Cup.
Cup and
yeah.
Luka Modric
scored
two goals,
you know.
And that and Luka Modric's single-handed performance in the World Cup, and they do tend to, I guess, value international competitions more so
mm-hmm.
than domestic competitions. But I thought at that time, at least for that calendar season, Mo Salah was the best player in Europe that year.
Agreed.
Like,
yep.
Didn't win any of the awards. It almost seems like it's a little bit of a cop-out. You know, he takes home, he being Messi, takes home the Golden Shoe. He's Messi, ergo he will win the Ballon d'Or. It's voted on
mm-hmm.
by national team captains and managers, media, and a popular fan vote. I don't
mm-hmm.
know the percentages of what counts for what, but much like an all-star team, you know, Kobe Bryant was making all-star teams when he wasn't even playing.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember Penny Hardaway started an all-star game, and he had played 3 games total that entire season, and he was a starter of the all-star game. So... yeah, I think that bit of detail right there lets you know how serious are these awards. I mean, I feel like when you include fan voting, and it's for a sport like soccer with the most global team in Barcelona with the most global player, people are just going to vote for him because they like him. And it has nothing to do with the way they play. And it has to be some fan voting in this, because if you look at the other – I'm not going to act like I have a problem with Messi winning. I mean, I'm not. It just, some of it just doesn't really seem to make sense. First of all, you have Riyad Mahrez in the top 10. I'm sorry. That basically cheapens the whole thing. Riyad Mahrez had a good, I mean, I'm glad they're kind of giving some love to the African Cup of Nations because they've changed the format of their tournament as far as the time of year is concerned. Their players are getting a bit more exposure. But Riyad Mahrez does not start for Manchester City unless somebody else is hurt. So you have a guy who doesn't even start for his club team, and he is ranked higher than the best player on his actual team of Raheem Sterling. I'm sorry. And after the season Eden Hazard had last year, and then Kevin De Bruyne, Sergio Aguero, even Antoine Griezmann, it's just when I saw that Mahrez in the top 10, I just went, okay, this doesn't really hold too much. It doesn't hold too much to me anymore. I mean, and the fact that, I mean, say what you want, N'Golo Kanté should be on the list every year, and he's not. So
I think it's especially hard, and give full credit to Virgil van Dijk
mm-hmm.
for being second,
mm-hmm.
which is almost like a win for a defensive player.
Pretty much.
It is hard when you're a defensive player and you're one of two, and your stats are negative.
Yeah.
Right? And how do you quantify what Virgil van Dijk does other than to list all the accomplishments? Because it's not like he's going to get credit for all of Alisson's clean sheets.
No.
And Alisson had that amazing run where, you know, he went through basically all of Europe and all of the Copa America without conceding a goal.
Right. Right.
And
but he wasn't getting nearly as many shots in his run through Europe either.
Yeah, because of Virgil van Dijk.
Because of Virgil van Dijk, yeah.
And Virgil van Dijk, okay, we know that he is a solid player because we look at him, we watch how he plays, we watch what he does,
mm-hmm.
and he is instrumental, and he deserves every bit of credit that he
absolutely.
Gets for being as effective as he is. But he's not going to have... That's if Virgil van Dijk scores 5 goals, that's a lot.
Oh, God. I mean, if Virgil van Dijk gets a brace, that's a huge deal. That's like Messi scoring five when you see Virgil van Dijk get a brace, because he's not even a defender that likes to push up. You know, he's a defender that knows what his job is and sticks to his job. But I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say you should eliminate fan voting altogether. But to compare the two, it's just like you're saying with the Heisman Trophy. Every now and then you get a player like remember when Ndamukong Suh was at Nebraska and he finished second in the Heisman voting, I think, or fourth in the Heisman voting, even though everybody who knew anything about college football said he's the best player in college football by a mile. And if you watch that bowl game when he had three offensive linemen on him and he still had like nine sacks, I mean, but still, how can you quantify the two? So, I mean, I get it. These awards generate a lot of interest in the sport. They generate a lot of money. They get a lot of people who are a bit more of the lay fan to just kind of be curious about it, which will hopefully get them to pay money to watch the game a bit more. But to compare Robert Lewandowski with Alisson Becker, just, I don't know. You can't – one can use his hands and one can't. Like, when does this become – I mean, when does this become a bit redundant and when does it not make sense to do anymore? And I mean, I'm one of those people that's like, I get it, but I try not to put too much stock in it because again, it's you're comparing apples to grass seeds. It just doesn't work. So that's why you're going to have players like Messi who are going to continue to win year after year after year after year. And yeah, you'll get a Virgil van Dijk, you know, a Fabio Cannavaro, who won, but you know, I believe Paolo Maldini was in the finals a few times and finished second or third a few times. So I mean, it happens, but it's rare when anything like that's actually going to happen. So it'd be cool if it did, but I'm not going to say I'm surprised, and I'm not mad at the choice either.
That was going to be my follow up question. Is the fact that we're talking about this and saying, you know, it's kind of bunk and how are you going to compare them, a disservice to or evidence of our, I guess, oversaturation with Messi, our jaded, like, he has just been so good for so long, it's an expectation. We're no longer in awe of Messi, that when Messi doesn't score 36 goals in 34 games, it's considered a bad season.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that we're looking at and we're just no longer as impressed by Messi being Messi. And let's be honest, Messi's not young anymore, but he doesn't seem to show many signs of his powers waning. That we're just not impressed by what he does anymore. The standard, the bench is so high for him that winning a Copa del Rey, winning a La Liga title. He's got 12 La Liga titles. He's like one away from the record for a Spanish player.
Wow. That's one away from Ryan Giggs as well for like the all-time record, I think, for Europe. Yeah.
Yeah. He winning that, making it to the semifinals of the Champions League is not enough.
I mean, he really can't even lose the Champions League because it's another thing where they're like, well, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo has five. You only have four. And you were on the bench for the first one. You didn't even really were involved. You know, it is. It's like, how much is too much and how much is, you know, is this kind of bad for Messi while he's continuing to play? I think the even all the accolades he's getting, I agree. I think Messi's bar is extraordinarily high. And it won't be really appreciated until he's not playing anymore. And then you see, of course, you'll see, you know, much more YouTube tribute videos and stuff. And hopefully you'll see some replays on BN Network or something like that. But, you know, it's how many people hate the fact that the Patriots win Super Bowls as much as they win Super Bowls in a league that's supposed to have a lot of parity. And yeah, it gets a bit much after a while. And, but you know, it's not, at least he's playing in Spain where there is actual competition in a week in, week out basis. But it is. It's oversaturation. But I can't blame Messi. I can't get upset with him about it. And, you know, he doesn't appear to be overly boisterous about his accomplishments, at least in the international media. So, like, he doesn't do anything to really bug you either. I kind of maybe wish he had a little bit of Zlatan in him because that would make things a little bit more interesting. But I mean, it's kind of one of those, like, it is what it is. And we should just, you know, just take it and talk about it when it happens and then say, you know, let's see what he does next week.
Yeah, the running, for all the stuff that comes out surrounding Messi, and he wants this, he does that, he said to Barcelona he was going to do this, the contracts, all of that sort of stuff, it comes out mostly not from Messi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very
it's not
rarely
his, yeah.
It's or not him directly.
Yeah.
You know, the running joke that Sid Lowe used to say was, you know, Messi, he would tell the story of all the players coming down after the Champions League final, walking through in their suits and primping and preening, and Messi walks out in a pair of jeans, flip-flops, and a Messi jersey.
Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And that kind of just seems to be how he is, a little bit of Paul Scholes in him.
Yeah.
Show up, play soccer, score a goal, go home.
Right. Well, but, you know, in the sporting lexicon too. I mean, fans eat that stuff up. There's nothing better than a guy. I mean, kind of talked about like a guy like Bo Jackson, where you know I heard reporters say this, that he's so good and he doesn't even care. You know, like we eat that up. We just love that. Put a bow on it and present it to us every day.
But so wrapping up the discussion of the Ballon d'Or, Messi takes home his sixth. He breaks the tie with Cristiano Ronaldo. Matthijs de Ligt took home the award for the best under 21 young player.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting list there that contains a unique collection of players who I had not heard of. Kylian Mbappe and Matteo Guendouzi.
Mm-hmm.
So the players that fit into those categories. Guys I had heard of, like João Felix and Vinicius Jr. Guys I hadn't heard of, like Samuel Chukwuemeka, Lee Kong-in, and Andre Lunin. Of course, Jadon Sancho, you know who that is. Kylian Mbappe, who everybody thought probably would win, and Matteo Guendouzi.
I'm not so sure about that either. Unless you include rugby tackles in the skill set, but
the less said about that, the better. The Women's Ballon d'Or Award shockingly goes to Megan Rapinoe, who completes the clean sweep of FIFA International Awards. Once again, probably buoyed in large part by her performance in the Women's World Cup. But full credit to her. Lucy Bronze finishes second, and Alex Morgan finishes third. So that is it for the awards. In other news, did you know that Black Friday was a thing over in England?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
They should. You know, it's now a thing in South Africa. I saw that.
It's definitely a thing over in England. I was talking to two of our friends, Arsenal Sean and Solicitor Banks. They said Black Friday was, they wished me a happy Thanksgiving, you know, Thanksgiving not being a thing over in England. And they reminded me that Black Friday was a thing. I responded, I know. A couple of Premier League teams got an early jump on their shopping by firing managers.
Yeah. Yeah, bunch of
Arsenal. Arsenal lets go of Unai Emery after a little over a year in charge. Quique Sanchez Flores, the second time is not a charm for him at Watford Paris. He is gone after less than 3 months. But possibly my favorite firing of the weekend is not a team in England. It goes to Massimo Cellino. He of the ex-Calgary and Leeds United fame, who fired Fabio Grosso after 3 games and less than a month, but replaced him with Eugenio Corina. Now, that in and of itself is not humorous. What I do find humorous is the fact that guess who Fabio Grosso replaced three games ago.
Oh, God. Eugenio Carini?
Yep.
Oh, my God. You know what? For the life of me, I was trying to figure out. I was like, why does Mike want to talk about this Serie A, Serie B team that can't, that, you know, that doesn't really have much history? The Wikipedia page is short as all get out. That is ridiculous. I never. That's pretty good.
Yes. Now, Max Mocellino once worked, when he was running Leeds, once said, if you can work with me, you can survive anything. And in his time at Calgary, I think he went through 36 different managers. He went through six managers in the course of a season at Leeds. So firing managers for him is akin to changing socks. I just find it humorous that he fired a manager after three games who was replaced by the manager who he replaced.
Like, why would the guy take the job back? That's what I get.
I don't know.
Why would you take the job? I'd be like, no way, dude. You're crazy.
And Cellino got suspended by Leeds. He was basically booted from Leeds. Brescia is also of some interest because that's where Mario Balotelli is playing right now.
Ah, interesting.
He, Grosso had a pretty rough time of it. He was in charge from the 5th of November to the 2nd of December. In that time, there was a two-week international break. He coached three games. All three were losses. They scored none and conceded 10. And there was the famous racist incident with Mario Balotelli, to which Cellino responded when asked about the problems that Mario Balotelli had. He said he's black. He's got problems, but he's working through them.
Yep, let's keep letting them own teams. Give them another one, because if this doesn't work out, man, just send them over here, man. Let them own. Let him own the Redskins. That'll make it interesting around here.
Well, I mean, it seems like he's extremely qualified, despite all the arrests and other things, to own a team. And I think it is worth mentioning that Leeds now in contention for promotion back to the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Which just so happens to coincide with the fact that this guy is no longer in charge of the team.
Yeah. Wow. So
from the situation of it could always be worse, you could be working for Brescia right now. But going back to what we need to talk about, I'm sure that you are not surprised that Watford fired Kike Sanchez-Flores as much because of how much they have struggled this season.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I am more surprised that he got fired before Manuel Pellegrini or Marco Silva.
Mm-hmm.
But the business is going to be the sacking of Unai Emery. And I believe we have two gentlemen who are both coaches who are here to discuss this and other things with us. Welcome aboard, Coach Matt and Coach G. Are you with us, gentlemen?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm in. Yeah.
All right.
Now, I love both of them. We go Coach Matt and Coach G, Patrick. Great to have you guys aboard. The only problem I have in this is only we could find the two coaches who sound exactly alike when you're talking to them on the air.
Yeah, that's
brother,
good.
How you doing?
Good.
Very good.
So, Unai Emery gets the boot. Freddie Ljungberg comes in, and results don't change immediately. We'll start with you, Coach G, since you are an Arsenal fan, and I should give you and Mr. Stead the opportunity to convince as only Gooners can. Meanwhile, Coach Matt and I are going to stay out of this conversation because, you know, we don't tend to spend a lot of time on this show trying to focus on mid-table teams.
Don't worry. I'm sure we'll be here allowing the two of you to discuss the firing of your manager in a couple of weeks' time as well. So.
Yeah, right. Only a matter of time.
We're going to minimize the amount of time that we give to mid-table teams, which is why we're not talking about Manchester United. Yes, I am trolling Man United. Go for it. Complain at will. All right, Coach G, how are you feeling about this move? What do you think?
I don't know. It's only 18 months, though. You know, coming from France and PSG, where he had great success, but even before then, when he was in Spain, he had okay success. He's a mid manager going to a big club. Just not a good recipe to even start off with. You know, firing of Pochettino, or was it the manager from Tottenham? You know,
Pochettino.
All the tweets and all that stuff. There's a bunch of love going back and forth with the players and the coach to the players. I haven't read anything about the love from the Arsenal players to Unai and back and vice versa. So I don't even really know if he actually has dove into the Arsenal life and if the players actually bought into what he was trying to do. It just seemed like from the very get-go, there was issues. And, yeah, they got second place in Europa last year and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But this is truly his team this year, and you can see that it's not really successful. Then you have Jungberg come in last game yesterday as a head coach, and you can tell automatically, you know, they're not going all the way to the goalie to start off. Their offense, they're stopping and they're actually turning around and going more offensive. So there's going to be a little bit of turnaround, but as a coach, you're only good as the players are. And the issue is the two center defenders, they don't have good, strong, young men to clean up all the garbage that the midfielders are just lapping, just not doing anything. So he didn't spend enough money or any kind of money on the defense for David Luiz, whatever. But, you know, that was the issue from the very get-go. So he kind of just didn't really steer the ship in the right direction. 18 months, I think, for Arsenal. I think it might be a English thing now, coming to the American thing. Like, we need to see the results right away. And if not, you're gone. So it seems like they're going to that direction now. We'll see. We'll see what the future is. So I'm kind of just hoping that we're not dead last. I'm hoping that we're at least top seven. I hate to say it, but, you know, seeing Sheffield United and what they're doing this year and every other team, it seems like they got the crap together. And Arsenal is just barely squeaking on right now. That's just my thoughts, but it's going to be a long season for us.
Yeah, I have to be on all points. You can never take somebody's success at PSG to mean anything at all, and I've been no fan of PSG, and I think it's going to be bad for Mbappe's career moving forward if he chooses to stay. I know they're going to offer him the moon because they can, but I don't think it's going to be good for him in the long run. Not until the rest of France decides to play at the same level as PSG, it's going to continue to be a stopgap for coaches who think that they can kind of kiss with the big boys, because anybody can win at PSG. I'm not going to take that at all. And seeing how he did play well, in Sevilla, he was able to manufacture some Europa League championships, but the final that he coached last year was abysmal. Arsenal was completely outplayed every step of the way. And that I felt like that was
awful.
The beginning of the end. It was awful. And then even starting this season out, they did not address the biggest concerns, which was central defense, which was their two center halves. They did not address it. David Luiz actually has not. I'm not going to put a lot of this on David Luiz. I don't think he's played that poorly. I think he's actually done pretty well considering the circumstances, because you're right. He doesn't have a defensive midfielder because he wouldn't play Torreira, so he's been left out in the cold. And then you're looking at now how Bert Leno looks like he should have been on the Ballon d'Or list the way he's played this season by keeping this team in games. Because you're looking at the last game they played, they could have easily lost that game 4-1. And then what's even worse is, though, but at least for Emery's sake, Emery could not put out a consistent lineup at all. So even if he wasn't given much of an opportunity, he didn't give himself the opportunity to allow his players to blend and allow him to grow into whatever system he was trying to employ. So if you're going to go with those players, then just go with those players and try the best that you can and coach them up. He didn't seem to have the ability to do that, and he couldn't handle the English game. So for all those circumstances, I'm not one who wants to push coaches out. I'm not one that says you got to fire coaches. And, in fact, in such a short time, I was really kind of like – I was not on the bandwagon for this when the Emery out signs started to come out. But after the last few weeks, it made complete sense to me, because I said, I don't think he knows his players. I don't think he knows what
agree.
He's doing. The fact that he can't get anything out of Pepe lets you know that, okay, the guy that that's the record signing can't even get on the field. He's not injured. And when he does play, he shows flashes of absolute brilliance that nobody else on the Arsenal team can even do. So I don't really I don't really see it. And then with what happened this past weekend, I'm going to give Lundberg a pass. I don't know why he was playing Mustafi, Kolasinac, and Xhaka at the same time. I don't know what he was thinking there. But he chose that lineup, and you saw that what how did they lose that game was because their center half couldn't really D up, and they didn't really know what they were doing. And don't forget, what's his name? Amadou or from Norwich? Luckily, he can't shoot because he had four wide-open shots to the goal, and he shanked them wide every time. He wasn't even close. But luckily, he can't shoot because they could have easily had four goals, and he could have had a brace. So, again, I also hope we finish seventh. But, you know, Arsenal now has to – teams like Sheffield and the Wolves have to be licking their chops when they get to play Arsenal because they go, okay, we can win this one. And same thing with Burnley.
Oh, yeah.
Because
without
they have – Arsenal has 4 points in their last five games. They have 4 points. And I'd say two of those 4 points were points they stole at the very, very end.
Oof, agree. Shoot. You know, and most of the, I don't know, but all the listeners, they don't know that we're a bunch of soccer guys on a text string. So every Saturday morning, every Sunday morning, we're texting left and right, talking crap. It makes my day, and it truly does. You know, but like – but we talk about this stuff almost every single week. You know, they're not closing down their defense. What the hell is the defense? Actually, it's mostly me, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, me being a defender and me being a goalie, you know, is like the last two goals that they scored yesterday closed down on their offense. Why are they giving this guy, what's his first name?
Timo Pukki. And they're giving him all kinds of space. And Matt Cantwell, he had all kinds of space. His name Todd? I think it's Todd.
So moving forward, Arsenal have a relatively light run of fixtures for the next 2 weeks. Brighton at home, they go to West Ham, who are in all sorts of trouble. Standard Liège coming up on the 12th away in Belgium before they play Man City. And then they play Everton to start the Christmas period. That's when it gets a little bit tricky. In the span of the Christmas period, you have Everton away, Bournemouth away, Chelsea at home, and then Manchester United at 3 p.m. on the 1st. Manchester United probably being the easiest of those games that they will have to play. Where do you think Lundberg fits in? Is he a interim manager? And where do you think they might go from there? Coach Matt, I know that's not your team, but do you have any insight into what you think might happen for Arsenal in the next coming couple of weeks?
I don't know, man. Yeah, I was reading an article today by The Athletic talking about how you guys basically you guys really need like a big tactician. Like your team has always just been built on like a very technical style, so you guys are gonna have to buy someone really. Maybe Tuchel from PSG. I know you were just talking about. I don't want anyone from PSG. Instead,
I don't
want
a coach from PSG. Coach. I was about to be specific. Coach. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that. I mean, Tuchel comes from. I mean, he was at Dortmund before that. But you're gonna need someone who's like who's got a tactical background. But you need someone who's managed bigger clubs. Like it's so hard now. Maybe Allegri, I don't know. Like, it's just really tough. Like, this is the whole market, too. I mean, people are talking about it with Solskjaer now. Like, you know, now that Pochettino is, like, on the market, it's like, you know, when is Solskjaer going to be replaced? Because, like, over that 18-month span, like, Solskjaer has been worse than Pochettino. He's been worse than Emery, and it's like he's still there. I'm not trying to make this about Man U, but it's like I feel that Arsenal and United right now, you know, the teams that were the dominant teams of like the early 2000s, like are now like these mid-table like battling teams. And I feel like they're both looking for this, you know, diamond that's out there. It's like, you said that, you know, that you guys need to find like a big name coach. It's just like, who's out there though? Like, you know, it's so few, or it might, like it's the culture of the league now is like if you don't win within 18 months and you're gone, but it's like that's just going to make the market shorter and shorter and smaller and smaller. I mean, I don't know where they go. They're going to have to find – so I don't think Lundberg is the answer. I mean, he could prove me wrong. Solskjaer proved everyone wrong in the beginning, but then it's since gone wayward. I don't know. I was actually kind of surprised you didn't see kind of like a, you know, a wake-up call from Arsenal, kind of like, thank God we got rid of Emery, because there were reports
Agreed.
That players
I
were like literally
–
they were making fun of him. Like, they were making fun of him behind his back. They were making fun of his accent. They weren't listening to him. Like, this is all, like, really, really bad signs. Like, if that's getting out there in the media, like, I mean, even with Jose Mourinho, like, you were hearing things of, like, Pogba and having issues, but a lot of people were, like, feeling really bad that Mourinho, like, was sacked because, like, they felt, you know, they felt that a lot of it was on them. Like, you're not hearing that with Arsenal and Emery. You're hearing, like, thank God he's gone. So why wasn't there, like, that big... you know, step up for you guys. I don't know. This is a really big issue for you guys. I don't know.
I'm going to have to jump in here. As far as who the coach they can get is, first, you need to get a coach that knows the Premier League. That was mistake number one. Emery did not know the Premier League. So, that opens up your options right there. Number two, you don't need necessarily a big-name coach. I'm not even sure Allegri's the answer because he was coaching at Juventus when they had no competition as well in Serie A.
True.
There was none.
Yeah.
So the usual suspects of the other powerhouses of Inter as well as Milan and even Roma and Napoli to an extent, they don't have there really wasn't much there. So their concern was winning Champions League, which they were unable to do under Allegri. So that's not saying that takes him out, but I'm saying that doesn't necessarily make him all of a sudden this front runner who's going to be this tactician who's coached championships and stuff like that. Again, the English game is different, and we've seen that time and time again where coaches come and they take a little while. And you got to think, if Pep didn't have the infinite resources he has in Manchester City, would he be able to be as good as he is? Now, I think a coach from Germany would be something they should consider because that's proven to be something that's been effective. But also, we've seen players who have played and coached at different locations can be somewhat effective. You have to think about what happened with Frank Lampard. That's going pretty good, and it seems like he wasn't. People weren't enamored with him at first. We had Chelsea Mike on here, who was not too thrilled about the idea of Chelsea coming in. But Chelsea's got to be pretty thrilled with no transfer this summer that they're sitting where they're sitting. They look pretty well entrenched in the top four. So outside of that, you have to look at you can think of a Mikel Arteta as a potential coach. You can.
That's true.
You can think of Eddie Howe as a potential coach. You can think of Nuno as a potential coach. I'm not saying they should be or they should get the job, but there are options out there. I'm not one that thinks Lundberg's an answer because, as we're seeing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this is kind of a similar model, and I'm not saying it would be best to follow that model. So, but I think there are options, but look at the history, look around, but also, Coach D, you said this earlier, they don't have the talent right now. They just don't have the talent. Their center half, and like, I don't know when is Hector Bellerin going to get back on the field. I don't know. When is Rob Holding going to get back on the field? I don't know. You're playing Callum Chambers out of position. So, again, what's really going to happen? Not until a lot of these other things. There's so many loose ends out there. There's so many little parts that need to be tied up that Arsenal's got a much bigger fish to fry than simply finding the right coach. They need to find a coach as well as shore up the scouting situation. Look at what they're doing with how they're spending money, because they said they weren't going to spend money and ended up spending more money than they ever have, and it's proven to be not effective. So there's so many glaring questions. Hopefully, if you get a coach that the players and the organization respects, who has some real courage, then they can go there and right the ship. But until that occurs, Arsenal could be looking at a kind of run that, you know, that kind of Man U is on for a little while, where you think you're going to break out of it, and next thing you know, you're back in seventh again.
Yeah. So. Before we move on,
Dagger.
Think I was a coach fan, man.
Yeah, all right. Before we, like I said, we're not going to spend too much time focusing on mid-table teams in Manchester United. Before we move on to things at the top of other leagues, I want to give a shout out, of course, to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment, particularly the Premier League. There is a tasty one coming up this weekend. It is the City Derby at 12:30 on Saturday, so you know where you can find me. And other ones, it'll also be, you can catch the games, the other games there, and of course the games on Sunday, which will give you an opportunity to watch Sheffield United as they take on Norwich City, both of whom are coming off against of draws in the recent weeks against Arsenal and Manchester United.
A little, another dagger.
Yeah, just throwing them all out there. But while we were, as we turn the page a little bit, simply because the Premier League continues to be the Premier League, you know, we have not given enough credit to Liverpool, who just continue to roll. Tottenham. Tottenham.
Leicester.
And Leicester, of course. Kalichi Iheanacho coming up with the big winner for them over Everton as they stay in the in second place. Man City dropping more points and falling 11 points behind Liverpool now. Is Man City's title defense done and dusted? Is Liverpool now? We saw them come back from 10 last year. And I know that British Will would, it's probably cursing me right now for saying this and tempting fate as I say this, but are we at a point as we go into early December with an 8-point lead over Leicester City, 11 over Man City, and 14 over Chelsea? Is Liverpool in the driver's seat, and is Man City, for all intents and purposes, are they done? What do you think, Coach Matt?
I can't believe you asked me this. It's over, man. It's like Liverpool had this in the bag. I think it's like, at least from a United fans perspective, it's such like damage control. Like, let's just hope they don't win anything else, because I mean, this Premier League apparently will mean more if they win it. It's over. There's just no way. I mean, I hold out hope that, like, I mean, I just can't see Leicester doing it. I mean, Leicester like completely flown under the radar, at least with like a lot of, I mean, they're getting like applause like here and there, but like they're doing a fantastic job. Like Liverpool are, I mean, they've literally dropped points once and it was against United. That's it. Like they've won 13 other games. Like they're on this like unbelievable run. And it's kind of more of like amazing to see that like Leicester is only 8 points behind them. Like they're doing a fantastic job to even just be in that conversation. Like the fact that we're even, you know, like bringing that up, like, oh, consider like City has such a talented team that like you, under normal circumstances, like if there's a 9-point lead, you could say 10-point lead last year, you're like, oh, they could probably make it up. But I don't see Liverpool just have so many games in their favor right now. Like, they can just like let up a few and like, they're just fine. Like they're going to coast. Like they don't have to worry about like playing too many people down the stretch. If they have this lead, like we'll see how Christmas season happens. We'll see if it gets down to like, you know, 7 points, like will the pressure come on them? But I don't know. I just, if with how close they were last year and how determined they're playing this year, it's just, you can just tell that like, this is their goal. They're going to get it. Like they're going to ensure, they're going to pull out all the stops to ensure that they get this league win. They secure this thing. And they, you know, I'm sure they would even sacrifice like Champions League or any other cups, like just so they can win this title. Cause this is everything to them right now.
Coach Matt, you can take solace in the fact that there is one team that has taken points off of Liverpool, Leicester, and Chelsea. And it's United.
Yeah.
United's the only team that has beaten both Leicester City and Chelsea, and they drew with Liverpool. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where that stat comes into play, but somehow, despite all of his faults and foibles, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has managed to take points off of Liverpool, Chelsea, and Leicester right now, three of the top four. Is it done and dusted?
No, it's not. You can't count out Pep Guardiola in the way they can score goals. The way this team scores goals, that it's going to be difficult to say that you can count City out completely. But I'm also though, but I don't want to throw too much shade at Leicester. I mean, Matt, I agree with you. I don't think he's really received enough credit. You got to think that game on the 26th at Leicester is going to be a big game. That's going to be exciting. And
Huge game.
And you know, Liverpool does have a pretty light schedule coming up. I mean, this is a light schedule for Liverpool. Granted, you know, you talked about the Arsenal schedule earlier. Those are actually difficult games, as Arsenal is the only team in the Premier League that has not won any of their last five games. But I'm just saying that as my Arsenal poor stat of the day. But I think that, though, they still we feel like they've only played 14 games. That's it. So there's still over 20 games left to play. So there's a lot of football left. And, yeah, if Liverpool gets through the holidays, and they get to, let's say they get to February and they're still sitting on a 9-point lead, then yeah, I would start to think a bit more. But I don't know. I think I've just seen too many times this happen where a team gets up a little bit pretty early. Now, granted, they don't look nearly as strong as Liverpool does, but it can end up being brought back to the pack a little bit. So we'll see. You know, this whole Club World Cup thing is kind of annoying. That could cause a bump in the road. And you know, Champions League, FA Cup. You know, I think they're still in the League Cup as well. So there's just a lot. There's a lot of little things going on where we can see them stub a toe, and they better hope they can get through the next couple of months without any major injuries.
Yeah, but yeah, I think you forget about Everton though. They're a friggin' rival. You know, it's coming up in 2 days. Like they might, you know, I know it's at Liverpool, but they might drop some points against their rivals. So don't be surprised that I think Man City might have still a chance. I kind of agree with you. Like, don't count them out. That last game with Man City and the goals they're scoring and how they're just attacking, you can just tell that Pep's going to have them, you know, right in the back pocket, ready to go. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Everton might be kind of a challenge for them next couple of days. But yeah, looking at their schedule right now, besides Everton, Leicester in a couple of weeks, and everything else is just patty cake time for them. You know, Aston Villa, then we have Watford, West Ham, like this stuff that my team can play and beat them, kind of feels like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like don't count out Everton though. And Sheffield United coming up. So I do think that Man City might have a chance, a slight chance, but I think with Liverpool and what they had last year and they're, you know, winning the Champions League and playing this year, they look better than they did last year. So, Coach Matt, you might be right. This might be their year, but don't count out Man City, though. Man City might have something to say about that.
I think it's going to be real interesting, the fact that they get Leicester City almost immediately after they get back from the Club World Cup, depending on how long that goes. So that's going to be the one to watch. And it just so happens that it will be Boxing Day. And a late game, an 8 p.m. kickoff on Boxing Day for Liverpool. So an interesting one there. So turning our attention to things that happened on the continent over the weekend. In true UEFA fashion, they managed to do something that I feel like only they can do and announce the groups for Euro 2020 before they actually know who's in the groups. The groups themselves will not officially be decided until the playoffs are completed in March, because remember, there are still 16 teams playing for the remaining four spots, but we had the group draw, which in certain current circumstances, we already knew who was playing in certain groups, like Group C had already pretty much been determined. Group B had pretty much already been determined based on the fact that it's being staged in different cities, and the hosts had to be able to play two games in the country. So we knew, for instance, that England was going to be in Group D, and if Scotland makes it, they have to be in Group D. So there were all these things. But anyway, UEFA pulled the UEFA, and we had talked about the potential for a group of death last week, Ted. It wasn't the one that
group
we
F.
thought.
No.
Yes, Group F. Portugal, France, Germany, and one of Iceland, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, or potentially also Georgia, Belarus, North Macedonia, or Kosovo.
Oh, throw the white flag. Jeez,
yeah.
Like, seriously, if you're one of those countries, wanting to win but not wanting to win, like, what's your motive? Like, yeah. Like, you might be in Group F. Like, you're screwed. Like, what are you supposed to do in this situation?
I think their only hope is that maybe a player for one of these teams can actually be seen by some coach for a player on one of these other big three national teams and goes, oh, you see that guy from North Macedonia? He looked pretty good. Let's see if we can bring him in for a trial. Outside of that, this is a lose situation all around for those squads.
So it comes to that, if Romania qualifies, they can't play in Group F, but potentially this group could be Iceland, Portugal, France, and Germany.
They're calling that a group of death, but honestly, don't three teams qualify, like, out of the group?
Yeah.
So, like,
well,
it's really only death for, like, that
one, though. Like, not every group's going to have three teams. I think I think half of them get three teams. So you could see a situation where, because there's a lot of draws or something like that, that they don't actually get a lot of points in that group. Let's say that somebody wins that group with 4 points. And then you're sitting there looking at a team like Portugal or Germany who's like, well, wait a minute, you know, but there's, because their group was, they were beating up on each other so much that they don't have a strong showing. And there's another team that has a 4 points and they finish third in their group and they're out. So it could happen.
Yeah, it could. I honestly think the whole format is weird.
You need a degree in data analysis and statistics to be able to understand this playoff format. But I mean, I'm just going to wait and see.
Also, the fact that Northern Ireland might play the Republic of Ireland, like, for the final to, like, get to the, I'm like, okay, all right, like, let's just have, like, a entire country, like, riot, you know, when if they both play each other in the final. Like, that was really smart, UEFA. Like, great job, like, on that one. God, it's so idiotic.
And they're playing. What I love is England's group, which has Croatia and the potential to have both Croatia and Serbia. Like, on what planet would that be a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
At the Euros in England, Croatia playing Serbia.
Yeah.
You want to talk about two countries don't particularly like each other?
Yeah. And they're going to be and this takes place all over Europe. This game could be in Baku, Azerbaijan, for all we know.
Unbelievable.
The potential for things to pop off are pretty high. I shouldn't pass judgment on the people of this country, but come on, man, this is recent history we're talking about here. We still have beef when England plays Argentina over the Falkland Islands War. So,
right.
I seem to remember Croatia did play Serbia in a group state in a qualifying game, and there were all sorts of fan trouble. But this group, I believe, is played in England and Scotland. So it just seems like having Croats and Serbs in the same group in England, which is the home of soccer hooliganism.
Yeah, they invented it, and they're still the best at it.
So as I'm looking through, you know, our group, those groups look interesting. You have the Netherlands, Ukraine, Austria, and then the potential for Georgia, Belarus, North Macedonia, or Kosovo. If Group F is the group of death, then I would say potentially Group C is the group of snore. Because, like, there's just really not much.
Another one.
Oh no! I mean, yeah, no. This especially with who the potential can. I mean, they would hope that they would get something of some sort of substance to join that group because, you know. Austria seems to be a relatively, I don't want to say a regular qualifier, but they've definitely stepped up their game in the international game recently. So they've been available for more. They're kind of holding their own, but they're not winning anything. But, you know, the Netherlands also, they haven't qualified for the last two. They didn't qualify for the last Europe or the last World Cup. So Netherlands is kind of like creeping back in here. So, I mean, but you couldn't have given them a better invitation to be welcomed back onto the world stage because this should be a walk in the park for them.
Also, Ukraine won their group and Portugal was in their group. So, like, and they're not like, I'm not saying that they're going to be amazing, but they can also, like, surprise people. I mean, that could be like, it could
be
an interesting group. I mean, I think that Netherlands, like, will walk away with it, but, like, that second or possibly third position could be really exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, exciting. We don't know. It might be like last year where like everyone decides to tie each other.
Yeah, that was
and then
so
eventually
bad.
They get to the final.
And they play like everybody like Greece did in the 2000 Euro.
Coach
yeah,
Matt touched
yeah.
on this one briefly with Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland playing each other for the spot. Northern Ireland has to get through Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Republic of Ireland has to get through Slovakia. If they do, they will join Group E, which has Spain, Sweden, and Poland. As much as I love the provision,